A man who's joining us today on the show to talk all things Serie A transfer window as we start our build-up to the start of the season is a man I'm delighted to say who, unfortunately, we haven't had for a very long time on this show. He's back, though, by popular demand, and I'm delighted to say that back once again, almost like a brand new signing, if you will, for the World Football Daily team, is Mr. Carlo Garganese from Goal.com. Carlo, mate, how are you today, man? It's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show. It's been far too long, mate, far too long.
Yeah, it's good to be back, Ollie. It has been way too long. But I'm excited to be back.
Well, I hope you've been keeping well. I hope you've been keeping up with everything going on in this pretty manic off-season. And let's get down to business with Italian football, because we've been talking so much about Spain and England, yet there have been a number of big changes in Italy. The first that I want to get into is, of course, the signing from Manchester City of Stefan Jovetic. But what is this going to have as an impact on Fiorentina, losing such a key player this summer?
Well, actually, my opinion on this is different to many others, and I don't think Fiorentina are going to miss him. I think Fiorentina have got a great deal out of it. I mean, they've sold him for pushing on €30 million, and as his replacement, they've got Mario Gomez for almost half the price. And Mario Gomez is pretty much a guaranteed 20 goals a season man. Jovetic only scored 13 goals last season, which isn't a bad total, but when you consider that Fiorentina probably have the most creative midfield in Serie A, it's not a particularly amazing total. And you know, my opinion with Jovetic is that since his cruciate ligament injury in 2010, 3 years ago now, I don't think he's improved as a player since then. I mean, he's, I think, 23 now, so he's still young. But, you know, when he burst into the scene as a teenager, I mean, he just looked like a future world beater, and I just don't think he really has developed. He's still a good player. I think he'll do well for Manchester City. He'll score goals, but I don't think he's the player that they really need Manchester City to take them onto the very next level. So I think Fiorentina are coming out of this deal a stronger team.
So, you're highlighting there, especially Mario Gomez. And with Gomez, as you say, it's a guaranteed finisher. And at 28 years of age as well, he's a striker who's probably getting into his prime right now. Do you expect him to fit in, though, with Serie A comfortably straight from the get-go?
I believe so. I mean, he's been well in pre-season so far. And he's a goal scorer. Technically, not always the neatest player. But, I mean, you just have to look at the players he's got behind him. I mean, David Pizarro, Borja Valero, Juan Cuadrado. And then, you know, you've also got the likes of Adam Ljajic and Giuseppe Rossi if he comes back from his injuries, which is no guarantee. But, I mean, there's so much creativity behind him. I can see him scoring so many goals this season.
Plenty of goals there. And they've added some depth as well. Maybe not the youngest player on the pitch, but the signing of Joaquin from Malaga at $1.7 million. Do you see this as a deal, or do you see this as a backup investment?
Yeah, a little bit of a strange one. Someone they didn't particularly need. I mean, Juan Cuadrado, if I can say his name, is such an exciting player. So much flair, so much skill. One of the best dribblers in Serie A. It's difficult to see how they can fit Cuadrado and Joaquin into the same team. So I think, it's good for the depth, and it gives Fiorentina options.
Now, looking elsewhere around Serie A, and Napoli, new manager Rafa Benitez, very much getting involved with the Spanish connection of things, picking up three players from Real Madrid this summer. Gonzalo Higuain's finally got this transfer completed and will be a Napoli player next year. How much of a replacement can Higuain be for Cavani?
Well, I think Cavani is, along with Falcao, probably the best penalty box striker in Europe. So obviously Cavani is going to be a huge loss. I mean, he's a different player to Cavani. He's got more to his game outside the penalty area. I think if he returns to the kind of form he was showing for Real Madrid prior to last season, then he's going to be a massive hit in Serie A. But, you know, last season he struggled badly, him and Karim Benzema at Real Madrid. But having said that, though, I think he's going to do well. And Napoli, like Fiorentina, so much firepower, so many offensive players. It's difficult to see where they're going to fit in, or their new guys. But yeah, Higuain is going to be the main man at Napoli, that's for sure.
How does Rafa Benitez change this Napoli side in terms of the style of play? Because we saw Benitez, especially with Chelsea at the end of last year, playing a very attacking and open style of football. It was a joy to watch. It was a little surprising to see him playing like that. How does he approach Serie A, do you think, as a manager?
Well, we know typically Benitez is someone who liked to keep things tight. But you're right, at Chelsea last year, he did open up a little bit more. I mean, it looks like he'll probably go for we'll have to see as the pre-season goes on, but it looks like he'll probably go for a 4-2-3-1 formation. He's definitely going to play with a back four, which is already a change from Mazzarri, who played a three-man defence. So, you know, he's going to try and tighten up defence, which is a good thing, because one of the criticisms of Napoli over the last few years as they have leaked goals. But, you know, he'll probably play the 4-2-3-1 and he'll go for two holding midfielders, and then he'll probably give licence to the three attacking midfielders and the one in attack to probably switch positions and move around a bit. And I think Napoli, they've got so many attackers. I mean, I don't know how they're going to fit all of them in.
Napoli have arguably improved and are definitely going to be a different side coming out this season. Fiorentina, you're saying, have found cover for Los Jovetic and have added to their game as well. Milan, we saw, have a very strong second half of the season once Mario Balotelli arrived. Have any of these sides, though, done enough to put pressure on Juventus, stop them from winning a third straight Scudetto?
Well, I think Juventus are clearly still the favourites for the Scudetto. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And they brought in Carlos Tevez and Fernando Llorente, who should be an upgrade over the strikers that they had last season, and Angelo Bonna, which increases the depth in the defence. So I think Juventus are definitely the favourites. But Napoli and Fiorentina, I think Fiorentina are a potential dark horse. And Napoli are obviously much closer to Juventus than they were, but I think you have to make Juventus the favourites, because they're more complete over in every department, on the pitch, the defence, the midfield, the attack. Napoli still a little bit lopsided. They still need a bit of work in the defence, personnel wise, and they probably still need a midfielder. And the same with Fiorentina. If you look at the defence, you know, they just doesn't compare to Juventus' backline.
That depth you mentioned for Juventus with Agbona, I mean, he was somebody who was gathering a lot of attention last season and in the transfer windows last year. I believe at one point Milan were looking at him as well. Are you surprised that he's made that jump across Turin rather than Torino allowing him to go somewhere else and not allowing him to join the cross-city rivals?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's also a bit of a surprise that it's taken this long for Agbona to make the move to a bigger club, because when he first arrived onto the scene, he was tipped as a future Italy international, as a future Italy regular. So it's good, I mean, that he has finally moved on. A little bit of a surprise. And also, it would be interesting to see how Agbona fits into the same lineup as Giorgio Chiellini, because for me, they're quite similar players. And if Juventus are playing a three-man defence, I'm not sure how, again, they're going to fit into the same starting 11.
And you've got Paul Pogba as well, who had an incredible breakout season with Juventus yesterday. Last season, sorry. Sorry, Carlo, there. Pogba was really considered maybe a bit of a troublemaker at United, came to Juve, settled down, started playing great football. Has he cemented himself as an almost guaranteed starter in this starting 11 as we get set for the pre-season friendlies and, of course, the beginning of the season?
If I was coach of Juventus, he would start for me. Simple as that. I think he's an absolutely fantastic talent. He's got the potential to be one of, if not the best, centre midfielder in the world. I mean, he's got everything: strength, pace, power, vision. You know, he can shoot, both-footed, can pass, and, you know, not just physically and technically, he's a great player, but mentally, he's absolutely fantastic. I mean, he has got a bit of a bad attitude. You can tell that. And he's very arrogant, but, you know, a lot of the best players are. I mean, he's good and he knows he's good. That can cause trouble down the line when it comes to, you know, when a player has an ego like Pogba has. It can cause trouble down the line in terms of demanding certain number of certain number of appearances and wages and, you know, wanting to move on to a big club. And I can probably see a few problems down the line for Juventus in that respect. But at the moment, I would start him ahead of Marchisio. I think he's a better player than Marchisio already, and he's only, 20 years old? So for me, I'd put him in the first 11.
With a slightly combustible character like him, and also with Tevez going in as well, is it going to be a harder job for Conte to keep everything settled at Juventus, do you think, this season?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, they've won two league titles on the trot, so you know it's never easy to keep the motivation levels up and you know the hunger levels and I mean I would personally like to see Juventus really go for the Champions League this season. Whether they're strong enough, I'm not sure. I still think the likes of Bayern and maybe even Real Madrid, who are having a good transfer market, are a little bit further ahead of Juventus right now. But I would like to see them focus a little bit more on the Champions League, because they've won the title 2 years in the trot, and I think they don't have so much to gain winning the title again.
Finally, Carlo, let's have a quick look at the two Milan clubs, and Inter Milan in such change right now, especially with the rumours of the club being sold. You've got a new manager in there as well, with Stramaccioni gone, Mazzarri. I mean, can Inter pose a threat to the European positions, to the Champions League positions this season, or are the Inter fans going to have to wait and hope that maybe next year is the year they can start putting all the pieces of the puzzle together?
Can they challenge the European positions? Well, can they challenge the Champions League positions? At the moment, no. But, you know, there's still another 5 weeks to go until the end of the transfer window and, you know, the rumours of the takeover. If that does go through before the end of the transfer window, which I don't think it will do, but if it did, then, you know, there's going to be money to spend and Inter could improve their team and their squad. But at the moment, I don't think that the players that they've brought in are really going to improve the team, not straight away. I mean, the experienced players they've brought in, like Campagnaro and Andreoli, I mean, they're not going to add anything. And the youngsters that they've brought in, like Belfodil and Ruben Botta and Mauro Icardi, they have an average age of, you know, 20, 21, and they're pretty much unproven on the biggest stage. There's potential there, no doubt about it, but nothing more right now, and there's a lot of stronger teams out there in Serie A. So at the moment, I think with the current team and squad they've got, I don't think they have any chance really of getting the Champions League place. But you know, it could change if they make a few big signings between now and the end of the window. And a couple of names that have been mentioned, the likes of Nainggolan, they would improve Inter's first team.
You mentioned this, you don't think this takeover is going to take place. You don't think Moratti's going to sell before the end of August. Do you think it's going to happen, though? That's the big question, because Moratti's been very quiet and cautious about this and very firm, saying there's no more talks planned. We haven't got any further in our talks either in the last 24 hours or so.
It's difficult to say. I mean, these takeovers take time, especially when foreign investors are involved. I mean, we saw with Roma how long it took before the Americans finally came in. And if we really look back now, they haven't really improved the Roma setup that much, really. Not in terms of results on the pitch, anyway. So I think it is a big decision for Moratti to make, and I think it's one that he's not going to rush. So for that reason, I think it would be a little bit ambitious for us to think that it's gonna go through before the end of the window.
And just finally, Carlo, I've got to ask you about the incident that took place in the AC Milan friendly the other day. Constant and the rest of the AC Milan team walking off after racially abusive chants were heard by Constant from the crowd. Galliani coming out and saying that you know, racism in football is completely outrageous and we don't want it in the game at all, but we shouldn't have walked off the pitch because the rules state that it has to be assessed by the referee first and whatnot. But when we're talking about these such emotive topics, you can't really blame Constant for walking straight off and acting in the way he did, surely?
Oh, no. I mean, if it was me, I would have done exactly the same thing. I mean, it depends on the individual, doesn't it? I mean, I don't agree with the comments of Galliani at all. But it's so difficult. I mean, what can you do? it's, I just think that they tried everything, but it's in Italy. Maybe they need to go tougher. You know, maybe they need to start deducting points. And I just think the fines are obviously doing nothing, because when we saw it last season in Milan with Balotelli and with Kevin Prince-Boateng, and you know, we saw it during Milan versus Roma, and I mean, it happens again and again, and not just in Italy, it happens all over Europe. Italy highlights it a lot more than other countries in terms of you know, there's a lot of fines, but you know, it still keeps happening. So I don't really have an answer for you, to be honest with you.
But do they need to then? But playing games behind closed doors, if clubs are found guilty of having fans that are racially abusing players, I mean, is that what they need to do? Should that be their next step? Just go from these fines to taking a big, drastic step to try and just stamp it out of the game?
It's difficult, because when there's minorities involved, it's not always the right solution. Because, I mean, just to give you an example, and I don't want to, you know, be looking at going into conspiracy theories, but, you know, a lot of the time when there's problems in the crowd, it may not even necessarily be the supporters of a certain club. You know, some clubs may put their own supporters in the section of an opposition team, and then. You know, they can cause trouble, and it's always difficult to prove as well where there's racism and violence, and you know, there is no real easy solution, to be honest with you.
Well, it's never going to be a solution, I think, in terms of being a problem A in the world and B in football. And unfortunately, there are those people in the minority in football grounds that continue to ruin it for all of us. But Italy once again being rocked slightly by another racial abuse scandal in that pre-season friendly for AC Milan. Carlo, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today, mate. And I'm sorry we're finishing on that sour note, but it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, mate. And we look forward to getting you back on. Hopefully before the season starts, and definitely once the Serie A season gets kicked off and underway once again.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks, Ollie. Good to be back, mate.
Thanks so much there, Carlo. Carlo Garganessi there joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Italian football and Serie A. But it's time to move on, and I'm delighted to say that I've been joined.